coffee. I would like to come in and read the Word of God. Now look, if you are on your way to heaven, and I am on the way to hell, what do you think to do?
We'll do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
And WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. Tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Welcome into the dustbin of history. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. And up next, a lost episode of Gene Shepherd, rare, unavailable online or anywhere, from the Heinz Collection, September 5th, 1962, a story of radio performers. To wrap up tonight's dustbin of history, WBAI, New York.
Thank you. Well, I see now where this insurance company has finally decided to do something about the real worries about people. Now, most people don't worry about dying, you know that. Most people think they never will, actually. Most people think that just before they go, they will make the final discovery that will save them. And, yeah, and they'll live forever, you know. They'll make that big discovery of that great, that final chlorophyll. They'll make the discovery of the final secret ingredient, and they'll shoot it in your arms just as you're about to whip out your last words, and then you'll be able to get up, you know, and pull up your pants and go back to work. Or fist fighting, or whatever it is you're going to do, you know, for the rest of existence, the eternity, and so on. Wouldn't it be fantastic if you did live forever? 42,000 years, you're still arguing with the chick. You know, oh, what a hell. Oh, boy. And, you know, speaking of living forever, how about great last words? You know, all people always talk about great last words. Were probably the greatest last words I ever heard in my life. We'll just put you on your test here. See whether or not you're a part of the great American tradition. We'll just see how much of an American you really are. A great American of the 1930s. When about to kick off, he had all his friends in. You see, they all came into the hospital there. He'd been sick for a while, and they all came in to see him, you see, this day. And it was just like any other day, you know. He'd been sick there for a long time. So they all arrived, and they were all sitting around and eating the fruit and talking and saying, you look good, and, you know, you look better than you ever looked when you were out walking around. And, gee, you know, you look just great. Your eyes will look nice. All of a sudden, he sat up, pulled upright, and he said these words. I gotta go now. And with that, he keeled over, and that was the end. And they all sat there with a funny look, you know, with the apple dribbling down their chin. One guy had a banana in his hand, and the big fat woman over in the corner still had her hand in the candy box, and he was gone. He says, excuse me, folks, I gotta go now. Okay, what great American was that? We'll put you on your medal. Yeah, well, you see, this insurance company has finally, gee, wow, that is a scary thing to realize that they might come along with the final invention and you will have to live forever then. I mean, you know, you would be up, do you realize you would be up against a fantastic, unbelievable moral dilemma then? Say what if, for example, you're a man now, you see, you're a man, and now for the last 40 years, it seems like you've been saddled with that gigantic thing on your back. 8 kids always going to college, you know, that kind of stuff. Money going out, work slogging away down at the old mill. You know, and every night it's the 5:43 and you knock down 4 Manhattans, the same treadmill. And you know, the chick, of course, is swinging along in every other direction. She's going along there. And then finally, just as you figure that the ticker tape is about run out, there's this big announcement in the New York Times. Universal Life, Live Forever Serum Discovered. It is now available down at Bellevue beginning tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. And she says, well, dear, what about it? Are you going down tomorrow? Are you going to be down there at 8? And you look at her and... You say, wait a minute, I want to read this all the way down. And down at the bottom it says, it is believed now with the discovery of this new serum that man can live throughout all eternity and probably forever, possibly for millions of years. There is no reason why his body will not last forever, 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 until the earth finally burns itself out. Guy looks around, looks at the breezeway. He looks at the martini shaker. He looks at his wife. She looks at him and says, well? Just thought you ought to know, there's a lot of things that are going to bug you in the future. I mean, you know, it is a question, you know. It really is a question. It's like all those clams are finally getting to the vital spot. You know, speaking of the vital spot and the clams... I see with this insurance company, now this is by way of things that are happening right now, that insurance companies have realized that most people don't worry about death. Posterity, come on. How many hours a day do you think about posterity? And leaving your poor little tithe to posterity? Really, seriously, now come on, level with me. Come on. Well, I can only say very few. Unless there's something really wrong with your glands, Dad. So most people don't think about, what do you really worry about? Well, you worry about losing your car keys. You know, this is the kind of stuff you really worry about. You worry about whether you're going to have change when you get to the turnpike toll booth there, see? And you wind up there and you reach in your pocket and you left your wallet home and there you are. You're stuck in your great big finned monster. Everybody, cars lined up all the way to Trent and you don't have a half a buck. These are things you really worry about, seriously. They really bug you. These are the things that make guys have heart attacks and die right on the street. Not concern over posterity. Nobody ever worries about. Only insurance men worry about posterity, and they don't either. They worry about making the $1 million club. That's what they worry about. Anytime an insurance man really is worried about posterity or your annuities, I wonder, you know. And I'm going to get immediately 5 angry calls from people who said, Shepard, I'm an insurance man, and I have been worrying about your annuities. I've been worrying. Whenever you talk about the world, you must always say to the world, present company, of course, excepted completely. Present company exempted completely from anything we say, anything. So any insurance men here, you all worry. And every father who's living with us this evening, who is tuned in, you too worry about eternal life. And if given the choice of eternal life, would live forever with all of those 8 kids standing on your back and the breezeway. Right now, does everybody feel good? The disclaimer has been made. Now we're all free and in clear. We're talking about them other slobs. Okay? All right. Now we're all set now. Now getting back, feel better, don't you? What an opening for a station break. Speaking of slobs, it's too early for that. Well, I could do the TV Guide commercial. Time out now for a word from TV Guide magazine. This week, TV Guide offers free, in the September 8 issue, the 1963 TV Set Buyer's Guide, How to Buy Your Own Shrine. A spectacular, fact-filled, 32-page insert answering all your questions about what's new in TV sets for 1963. What will they look like? How much will they cost? How important will color be? And what about portables and UHF conversion? You've worried about that. The TV Set Buyer's Guide, removable as a permanent reference. You can keep this along with the Bible, along with other great permanent works in your home. It's the TV Guide Set Buyer's Manual. They don't ask, will you get the same old jazz or not on the new sets? I mean, they don't discuss that. I assume you're going to get the same old reruns on the new 1963 sets. But you'll get the truth from TV Guide, now on sale everywhere, just 15 cents. Oh, boy, this is an exciting program tonight. Oh, gee, I'm really excited. I'm all excited about this new insurance scheme. First of all, this outfit, there's a new hard-hitting insurance company called... The Eternal Rock Insurance Company. And, that outfit rocks, I understand. They have great Christmas parties. And, I'm sorry, I had a... You'd be surprised. You know that one of the great rivalries between insurance companies along Madison Avenue and Park Avenue, where all the big insurance companies are, Equitable, over on 6th Avenue, all these big outfits, they vie between one another for the most wild Christmas parties. The biggest, most lavish Christmas parties, because somehow Christmas, the change of seasons, all of it is connected somehow with eternity, death, and annuities, and the actuarial tables. Isn't that a great word, though? Actuarial table. Do you know what actual means? Oy, 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 oy. This terrible realism, we can't stand it. But nevertheless, this Eternal Rock Insurance Company says that they're going to start taking care of the things that really bug you. For example, I have a note they sent me. It says, now this Eternal Rock Insurance Company covers losses of your credit cards. That you can insure your credit cards now, separate and apart and above and beyond the credit for them. And oh, incidentally, the credit cards will pay for the insurance for the credit cards. Which it gets pretty confusing. It gets like, you know, that Dutch cleanser picture, you know, on the cover of the Dutch cleanser cans where the lady's looking in the bottom of a frying pan and you see her reflection, Well, eventually, I suspect there will be an eternal credit card system somewhere up in that old heaven someplace. Somewhere. That great old diner's club above us all. And some people... can see Duncan Hines and all of the people who make the final, Brooks Atkins, the whole crew up in that great old diner's club up there, eternally all the way up there, as extending unlimited credit on your signature, of course, only. While we're on the subject of this insurance company, do you know that the same insurance company is now going to provide insurance against your chick cutting out? Now, there is a real insurance policy, and you know how they decide on this policy? Whether or not you get it, they take a look at the chick. And, I mean, it would be very shaking for a guy to say, we cannot insure you. And they gave her the eye test. It's in the eye, you know. The guy said, what do you mean? He said, well, it's in the eye. Can't insure that type. Tell it. We held the light up there to her eye just can't do it. I'm not kidding you. There is an insurance company now, men, that will insure you against the chick cutting out. And incidentally, it doesn't cost very much to either. You know, they figure, what? Huh? What about chicks? Well, they figure chicks are going to do all right. they don't worry about the other way around. You know, that's one of the great illusions of mankind anyway. Speaking of illusions, now, I'm faced with a problem here tonight. We don't have, speaking of problems and illusions, this is WOR AM and FM New York. This is something I don't often do. Now, I have a problem here. On the way down, I was debating whether or not, see, this is educational night. I was debating whether or not to tell a story about the Army or to tell a story, some more stories like last night about radio. Now, all I can say is that I'm in a quandary here. Now, I could tell you about the time that I did a radio show. Did I ever tell you about the time I did a radio show where I was gradually frozen into a cake of ice? I tell you about that one, Ed? I did a radio show frozen into a cake of ice. I was frozen into a cake of ice, and the microphone was, they ran it right down through the ice, and they hooked it onto me. Now, don't ask me why. I'm going to have to answer this one day before the eternal judge. I know it. And I was connected to the outside with a transmitter and a radio station and commercials and everything. And for 2.5 hours every day for one solid week, I would broadcast, and they would switch over to me where Shepard was slowly being frozen into the cake of ice for one solid week. And at the end of the week, I was totally frozen in the cake of ice. Don't ask me why. That's the worst kind of a question. What if I ask you why? Why are you doing what you do? You're going to say, because I got to eat. Blah, blah. I'm going to say something great. Boy, why? Well, do you want to hear more about that? Do you want to hear about the time that I did a show? I'm going to tell you, those were very different days. I did a show direct. Now, get this. Can you imagine a radio show? I'll just tell you exactly what I did. I did a 2-hour show one day from the center ring of a circus. Now, get what this was, though. It wasn't just the center ring of the circus. It was from the animal cage. I was inside, totally unarmed, with 23 lions, tigers, and black leopards for 2 hours. Now, here was what made it scary. I didn't realize it until afterwards. And then I started to read. I got interested, you see, in the way the lions looked after a while. I'd look at the eyes of the leopards, and then I'd look at the tigers. And, you know, I mean, you think, well, if they let me do this, it must be all right. Well, then it wasn't until afterwards that I began to read books about these animals. And I realized what a wildly insane stunt that I had done. And here's what would happen. I'd say, this old Shep here broadcasting from the big animal ring down at the Whoopie Doopie Circus. Oh! I'd say, excuse me a minute there with my friends. Oh, shut up, will you? Now get back. Yeah, this is the way it was. And they'd be running around past me, and this guy's, get back, pow, pow, boom, 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 and shoot this guy, ow, and then, rah, rah, rah. And I could hear him pawing the dirt behind me, and I'm standing there with my rotten bond suit clothes, I'm standing there, and I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to work my way out of this door. And never once did it bother me. Do you want to hear about that? How that started? Or would you like to hear about the time? Now I'll put it up to the listener now. I'm seriously, this is the first time that I've ever, in my experience, in my poor, sad experience in this world, ever actually put it up. What do you want? Do you want to hear the story about the Army? Now, I'll give you a little hint about what that's about. It involves green glass in windshields. Now, how that intrigues you, doesn't it? All right, now. Now, we'll just put it up to the listener. Which do you want? The first guy that calls in and says, Shep, give us the story about the Army, or Shep, give us a story about the radio. Because I'll tell you something about the radio show, about the radio stories. There's a lot you don't know about radio, you know. And there's a lot we in the radio business don't know about radio. Most of the people in the business, as a matter of fact, to be perfectly honest with you. And this we could go on with. Now, it's all part of the great education that we are all trying to gain in life. What do you think life is anyway? To you, is life gaining a series of set and accepted motions and then performing those motions throughout the rest of your time on Earth and keeping yourself reasonably free of danger? Is that what life really means to most, to you, Ed? Or is life, and you know, it can be a very different thing. Are you aware that life can be a totally different kind of thing? Where life is, let us say, a hall that has an infinite number of experiences and adventures there. And your life can be spent literally walking through this hall, learning what all of the whole thing of life has to offer. Now, both ways are dangerous. Now, that's the thing you got to understand about life. Both ways are dangerous. The man who takes a set pattern and becomes this, what we call the secure man, the great danger that he has to face in life is that one day he will realize that there's about 90% of existence he did not experience. And boy, that is one of the most terrible, terrible things to realize at the age of 65, I imagine. That I can't think of anything that would be worse than that. Yet, on the other hand, if you decide to walk through life like this great hall, the one thing that you will never feel, that the other guy apparently seems to feel, is a sense of comfort of place. Do you understand what I mean by that? The other guy says, I'm sitting in my chair, I'm safe, I'm friendly, I'm warm, and I've got plenty to eat. The man who walks through this other great hall will never really feel that. And he always envies vaguely the guy who does have that. And he knows you can't have them both. It's just the way it is. Now, which way do you want to spend your life? Now, I'm sure that each guy who is spending his life in a certain way feels deeply inside of himself that the other guys are all wrong. And yet he can't help but secretly admire and fear them. And at the same time, envy them. So every guy that wanders through this great hall, he keeps looking out at those guys who are sitting on their you-know-whats out in Darien and frittering away their lives measured by olive pits and how long the breezeway is and whether or not he's ever going to finally get that Chrysler Imperial paid for. And this is the way. And he keeps putting that life down, you see, as this guy's going through this great hall with all these wild things that he's looking at. And all the while, he secretly admires the fact, or envies the fact, that this guy seems to be sitting out there quietly, snoozing, and rarely does he explode. He envies this in a secret way. Believe me, the hippies envy the squares in a very real way. They do. On the other hand, the squares envy the hippies in just as real a way, and both sides hate each other because both sides are living a kind of life which they themselves secretly would like to taste. Now, the first who would be vociferous in saying no would be the hippies. And yet, believe me, I don't know whether that's true or not, because the squares are going to be just as loud in saying no too. And yet, what are they both teed off at each other for? Well, that one little ridiculous thing, envy. What were they saying? What are they saying there? Come on. Let's see what the guys are. Oh, they want to hear about radio. All right. I'll tell you about radio. You guys want to hear a story about radio? Well, I was reminded of a wild thing that happened to me once in radio. Now, you see, the first thing you got to understand about guys in radio, so radio has won, hands down. All right. I'll tell you some stories about radio that you've never heard before. This is not the stuff that will ever be printed in books like Funny Things That Happened in the Radio Station. Bloopers and all this little... That's kid stuff. I mean, ridiculous. Greasy kid stuff. Because the real tragedy about radio and the real sublimity about radio and the wonderful fascination of it and the involvement that you get in it is far subtler than any of the bloopers, the funny things, the time the guy said you-know-what on the radio and so on. That's kid stuff. And all of those things you can hear on any street corner in any given 5-minute period in New York. So why is it so great? Because it's on the radio, you know? So anyway, I think that one of the things that settles down into people who are in the radio in who are really radio performers. Now, there's two kinds of people today in radio. I'm talking about radio entertainers, who are a very rare lot today. They're so rare that nobody knows how to categorize them anymore. Now, today you either have to be an interviewer, a disc jockey who just presents records, a newscaster, or a husband and wife team that makes trivia, you know, small talk about what went on at the big party last night. Or forget it, you're not in radio. People do not know what to say when they run into a radio entertainer. Now, to give you an idea, I must get probably 500 letters a month from people who ask one question: what are you? It bothers them. And they keep thinking, well, you're not a disc jockey because you don't play any records. And that seems to bug them. Then they say, well, you don't interview anybody. And that seems to bug them too. And somehow, if they go to a nightclub, they don't expect Mort Saul to play a record for them. Or they don't say, Mort Saul, get up there and all of a sudden say, oh, friends, I'm going to be here tonight for the next, for the next 15 minutes. That's not a funny, that's not, I see, Eisenhower, John Foster Dulles, and our friends, for the next 10 minutes of my program, I'm going to interview Shelley Berman. they think he's out of his mind, you know, you came to see him. But somehow on the radio, we have reduced ourselves to the status of presenters of other people's work. So an interviewer literally says, ladies and gentlemen, I am very privileged here today to have Bertrand Russell. Well, I'm presenting Bertrand Russell then. I'm not presenting anything else. Just I've gotten somebody else from some other department of the world and brought him in, and I'm presenting him to you. A disc jockey does the same thing. He's presenting somebody's record that was made probably 3 years before. He has nothing to do with it. He just got a bunch of records and he plays them for you. Then on the other hand, the newscaster, in essence, he doesn't create the news. And rarely do we have people even to comment on the news anymore. Whereby they say, well, now here's the news and this is what I think about it. You know, in the Elmer Davis tradition, for example. Or the Edward R. Murrow tradition, for example. This has gone out of radio. It just doesn't exist. Oh, there are a few guys. And usually the guys who are doing it are thinly disguised voices for a special interest. They're not commentators, in a sense. In other words, they're almost propagandists. Dollars to come to see you, that gets them warm, they've had a couple of drinks. You can get by with murder, you know, in clubs. I've worked clubs. So it becomes a very difficult thing. You, in a sense, have to sustain yourself purely by what you, purely by the pure medium. You can't rely on, well, you're out, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you've got your chick with you, and a lot of things seem funny that wouldn't seem funny in the coldness of your own home when you're dead sober. That's a very different thing. Now the theater has that going for it too. It has a tradition. It has the New York Times writing 9 columns about it every day. It has $8 million to spend on sets and costumes and all jazz that go with it. So there is a great sense of personal security on the part of a performer who knows he's got $280,000 going out on the stage with him. It's a big difference, you know. Plus the fact that you paid $15 a pair of seats to come in to see him. You're prepared already to like him. You know, so the whole thing. Well, anyway, getting back to the story of radio. Radio presents to the performer a very difficult challenge. And in the end, it's a practically thankless challenge. And I'll tell you why. A man comes out, and I've done it. You walk out on the nightclub floor, and you start the work. Now you say, even if you just stick your head out on the nightclub floor, people applaud. That's a wonderful feeling, you know. I couldn't get over this idea of just walking out and they say, now, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, the guy you've been all waiting for, da 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 da, Gene Shepherd, hey, all cheer. Why, I'm home free already, you know. It's a great feeling. Well, it ain't like that on the radio. You never hear any applause. You never hear any cheering. And furthermore, the most difficult of all things that radio entertainers have to face is the fact that they are not officially accepted as entertainers even by the various critical media involved. For example, when a nightclub performer will open in a town like, say, Cleveland or Chicago or New York, there will be 5 reviewers there. There will be the local reviewers. You know this, Ed. Even a nightclub, There will be the Variety reviewer, the Billboard reviewer. There will be all kinds of people there to give him, in a sense, official recognition for what he's done. And so this is a very big thing to people. Everyone wants to be recognized in his work. You want to be recognized in your work. Well, even if the nightclub performer is only performing to, say, 50 people, there will be 5 reviewers there to review him. Whereas a radio show can be performing to 100,000 people, and how often do you see it reviewed in the Times or the Trib or anything else for that matter? Never. It's rarely ever even discussed or even recognized that it exists. So it presents all kinds of problems. Now, I am not giving an alibi here for radio. I'm just telling you the way it is. I'm not giving any soft soap either one way or the other on my side or anybody else's side. I'm just saying this is the condition under which the radio entertainer must work. Now, television is a very different thing. If a guy does 3 minutes, believe me, if you do 3 minutes on the Ed Sullivan Show, you are reviewed. Jack Gould will write about you if you said 2 things that were funny in 3 minutes. And this is a wonderful thing for a performer. He would much rather take his little 3 minutes and put it where people are going to see it than to take, say, 45 minutes and spray it out into the night. And it's just a matter of supply and demand, you know. So now you have to make your choice in the end. A radio performer has to, if he really is a radio entertainer, he has to say, well, I get my satisfaction from doing the show itself, you see. Now, here's the thing that develops within a radio performer. He develops a kind of frustration that no other performer ever knows. Now, it's because most other performers are given that very wonderful thing called public recognition. Now, the radio performer, in many cases, has a far bigger public, and that's interesting, than the one who's given the great accolades. Now, I would like to say this, that most really good radio performers, I'm talking about radio entertainers, there aren't many around. There's a few across the country, I can give you their names if you're interested, who literally, by their own talents and their own wit, entertain people on the radio with no recourse to records, with no interviews or any of this jazz. Now, so in the end, you know, they develop a very interesting kind of frustration. Now, many of these people have more, let's say, more total audience in a year, have heard them, have enjoyed them, know their name and respect their talent, that, say, even Alec Guinness has. How many people actually see a movie? Now, let's take a movie like America. Let's take a movie, say, here in America, we have a country of 100 and, we say about 200 million people, roughly. How many people do you think really will see a Terry Thomas movie in America? Let's say in a year, even. Well, it's a surprisingly small number out of the number of people who, out of the number of people around. But the noise that's made about it is far, far greater than the number of people who are actually affected by it. You follow me there? Because all of the press has seen it. And so to them, I mean, it's just like everybody sees the Terry Thomas movie, and it's a matter of currency with us. So in the end, it will seem like this man has entertained millions, but he hasn't actually entertained millions, nor has Alec Guinness for that matter. Now, on the other hand, a radio performer, do you have any idea how many people will actually hear, say, a broadcast, let's say my broadcast, between 11:15 and midnight on a 50,000-watt station like WOR? Do you know how much territory we cover? We cover about 20 states at this hour. Wouldn't you say that, Ed, conservatively? That people can easily hear us in 20 states. And there's no telling how many people here. You're just driving around in cars. Anyway, the number of people who might come into contact with this show by accident or design otherwise in one solid week, I would be willing to bet, far exceed the number who will see a big movie in 1 year. You know? I'm talking about the big art-type movies, something like a Terry Thomas movie or a Peter Sellers movie or a movie like, somebody like Guinness will make. Well, so in the end, the performer gets a very fascinating thing about him, you see. He develops a kind of aloneness, a real sense of aloneness. And I don't mean apart aloneness, aloneness. He feels that he's working in a way like probably the early artists used to work in the... Do you know that a man like Robert Louis Stevenson, for example, are you aware that Robert Louis Stevenson wrote books for years and, in fact, wrote 9 books before he even heard from the publisher who had published all 9 of them? Are you aware of that? He didn't even get a nickel for them, nor did anyone that he ever met ever say they'd read them. How many years must it have taken to write 9 books? Well, now this is the kind of feeling I suspect that radio artists perform under, you see. They it's like you're working in a little monastic cell, and you're creating this thing, whatever it is you do, you create this in a sense of creating it really for its own sake. Your contact is very, very tiny with the public. Yeah, your name is never, you're never on the front of TV Guide, you know. Have you ever noticed that even television shows that are not even on the air yet will have people on the cover of TV Guide? And there will be big celebrities before they even hit the air, because the great big publicity mill starts grinding, and they have stories in the Post and the Mirror, and nightclub performers can get themselves written about in newspapers without any trouble at all. What is Mort Saul really like? Well, I'm curious to know how many people actually sitting out there have ever seen Mort Saul actually work. Have you ever heard him? Have you ever actually heard him work where he's really working in a nightclub? I wonder how many people out of 1,000. I'd say it's minute. And yet, it doesn't stop the New Yorker, for example, from doing, say, a 5-part profile on him. It's an interesting kind of thing. Well, here's what brought this up now. I'm reading, and for in the end, here's what happens. This frustration builds up. And some wild things happen in radio stations that you never hear about that are the result of this monastic enclosure. For example, did you read the little note that came in from Washington about a week ago? Listen to this. I will read it to you in its entirety. It was the oddest radio show Washington has ever heard. A long diatribe by disc jockey Larry Justice, significant name, on the skinflint meanness of station WPGC. It started at 10:10 when thousands of listeners to Justice's radio show heard him say, "I am not going to broadcast any commercials today. Why should I do my job when they won't pay me what they promised?" Then Justice, who is 26, denounced station manager Robert Howard, quote, as a skinflint who won't even talk to me about money, even though I have a promise of a raise in writing. Listeners then heard a thumping. Justice announced, "I am locked in the studio control room and they cannot get me out." More thumping. After a rambling attack on the station's, quote, unfairness, Justice said he would play a record. He put on a novelty record. And he said then, after he put the, by the way, the novelty record is so bad that it has been banned by many radio stations. He put it on. And then he played it again. And then he played it again. He played it again. And between each time he would play it, he would come on with new blasts against the station. And then finally he says, "I do not like this rotten record. I am playing it only to force recognition of my rights." Then he played it again. 2 hours later, after Justice had played the records 18 times and they finally broke the door in, station officials gave in. Oh. Oh, radio. Roll it there. And I'll lay you 10-1. Everybody who heard that thought it was a publicity gag. In a pig's ear. Do you think when I got thrown out of WOR a few years ago, it was a publicity gag? Ha, 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 ha. Listen, I am still in the black hole of Calcutta. What do you think 11:15 at night is? But you know, I'll tell you an interesting thing about it. I want to tell you a story. I've only got to tell you the wildest story that I personally have ever known in a radio station. I had a friend who was a... we're kind of like, in a sense, interim people. Now, it's tough, you know, in a way, that if a guy was around, say, in 1935 on the radio, he would be recognized as an artist. Believe me, Fred Allen was recognized as an artist by official people. If Fred Allen was to make his debut today, he would be called a loud disc jockey that doesn't play his records. What's all this talk about this New England business, this town hall business? Why don't you play the record? You know, that's what would happen to him. I'm serious when I say that. I'm not being a sorehead. It's just true. Well, now, there were a lot of guys that came along who were born too late, you see, to make it in that world. And they yet, at the same time, had been intrigued by that world and had grown up to look upon that world as an artistic medium. You know what I mean, Ed? And they had developed techniques and so on, and they became entertainers just at the time nobody wanted it anymore. And were real artists. Well, I knew one of these guys. Funny, he was fantastic. This guy could hold a radio show for 20 minutes. Believe me, that for 20 minutes you couldn't stop listening to this guy. He could come on for 1 hour, and for one solid hour, you could hardly wait for the next word to come out. He was that good. He had dramatic tension. He had ability. He had technique. He had acting. He had style. He had something to say, which is even more important. He was good, in short. Well, nobody needed it. And they made him play records. They literally said, it would be the same thing as if you said, look, Marcel, we don't want those funny things. What you got to do is tap dance. And he said, well, wait a minute. I got a funny thing. Come on, I want to tap dance. Let's hear the song. And so he's going, yes, sir, that's my baby, no, sir. And he said, well, that's a funny thing. Shut up, play the tap dance. Yes, sir, that's my... And he said, well, in the end, the guy would go out of his skull, even if you made $1 million a week doing it. You know that, don't you? Well, that's what was confronting my friend, and I knew it, you see. And everybody knew it around there. He was working in... And, of course, hope always springs eternal. Not only hope, but it's like a painter... And they've decided they don't want painting anymore. He can't help but hang around a paint shop, you know? He's got to be where they're doing this stuff, and everybody's printing photographs and clipping out little things, you know? And he says, and you say to him, well, Charlie, why don't you leave the studio? Why are you hanging around where they got with the paints? He says, but I don't know anything else, and this is my life. You understand? An artist is an artist, you know? He can't just cut out. And so here he is, you see, and he's playing the records, and oh, it's sweat coming down. He can't stand it. It's terrible. And all the while, he keeps going from one radio station to the next. And he always says, look, give me an hour. Just give me an hour where I can entertain people. And they would say, well, all right, but what you got to do is play some records. No, I don't want that. What's the records got to do? All right, I'll play a couple of records. And so records are like cocaine with the public. You play one record, they want 50. It's a fact. So you can't compromise on that. You just cannot. So in the end, he's out of his skull and he's playing records, and he started to hit the jug. Funny character, and I'll tell you, he used to do a lot of wild stuff. He had such beautiful delivery, this guy, and there were all these kind of things that used to go on radio stations, which you don't know, and still do, by the way. You never will know about him unless you're really adept at it. But this guy used to have a bet, a $10 bet. He would bet you that he could say any word that you could tell him, any word that you want him to say that you could not believe he would say and get away with, $10 bet that he would say any word on the radio and he would not get a phone call. And he would say it clearly enough that you could hear him in the control room distinctly enunciate. And do you know that he never once paid off? And as far as I know, this guy made more money on that bet than he ever made on his salary. And you know how he would do it. It was wild. And I'll never forget the time he went into the... He began to develop a profound contempt for the public, you see, with their insatiable desire for pap and mediocrity, their insatiable desire for Mantovani records, their insatiable desire for Haydn quartets. They don't want to hear the human voice. They just don't, you know. And so he knows this, and he began to needle them. So I'll never forget one time I saw him do something. He went into the news department. You know, it was one of these stations where they have a 5-minute newscast every hour. And of course, he was cast into all of the roles. Newscast, he was playing the records and everything. He went into the news department and he took out a 5-minute newscast out of the files that was 4 years old and read it on the air. Absolutely. And now the news, President Truman said. And of course, it was a different president and everything at that point. I think it was Roosevelt or something he was talking about. But he went on for 5 minutes, and he was talking about stuff that had happened 4 or 5 years before. He even gave a 5-year-old weather forecast. Not a word from the audience. They sat out there and nodded. I'm telling you the truth. I'm not inventing it. So then finally the day happened. Don't go yet, Ed. The day happened. He was working in this little 250-watt radio station in this town that I know, which for the purposes of argument we'll call Cincinnati. And this little 250-watt radio station was in the highest building in town, like, say, at the 112th floor of the Empire State Building. Well, this little radio station overlooked the entire city. Well, he was a combination man. The transmitter was 20 miles out of town. And after 6 o'clock at night, he was the only man on duty. And they carried the network hour after hour after hour. And he was the only man up there. Get it? And it's on the 80th floor or something of this building. And they have an elevator that you got to come all the way up to, you know. And they had glass doors, big, thick, 4-inch glass doors, a very chic radio station that kept him locked out from the outside world. So one night, this friend of mine, who, because of his frustration, had begun to hit the jug, was a wild thing, went out on the parapet about 80 stories above the city, looking out over this great crowd of what he considered at this point probably this insatiable maw looking for nothing but records, and began to sail out over the city at 7 o'clock at night, just when twilight is coming down, huge 16-inch transcriptions. Just sail them out, great big, and they would fly like 2 miles. Can you imagine sailing great big records off the top of the Empire State, the great big transcriptions? And he had a stack of them, one after the other. He's sailing them out. Woo! Woo! And they'd sail out over the river. Woo! And all the while, the old station is going on, the mediocrity, and he's going, woo! Whoopee! Woo! Whoopee! And he's sailing these things out. Woo! 45 minutes later, they broke 3 glass doors and dragged him out. But he said it.
This is WOR Radio, your station for news.
Oh, it's WBAI New York, your station for nonsense. Like Gene Shepard from September 5th, 1962. Hey, we made it. We're not over yet. And I still have time to play the outro theme. Jimmy Dore coming up next. This is WBAI New York. Visit our Facebook page, The Dustbin of History, for more details and illustrations. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid, for The Dustbin of History. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And Sunday night, of course, 8 to 10. For the golden age of radio. Good night.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Well, I will go to the bathroom.